This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Trump says the United States will begin imposing a 5% tariff on all goods from Mexico starting June 10th if Mexico does not stop illegal immigrants coming across its borders. On Twitter, Mr. Trump said until the illegal immigration problem is remedied, the tariff will continue to rise starting July 1st and rising as high as 25% by October 1st. He said the tariffs will be removed once there is a resolution. Mexico's deputy foreign minister for North America said it would be disastrous if Mr. Trump goes through with his threat to impose the tariffs. Border Patrol says over 1,000 migrants were found crossing the border as a group early Wednesday. AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
U.S. Customs and Border Protection says it was the largest group of migrants ever encountered. More than 1,000 migrants crossed the border near El Paso, Texas, early Wednesday. Authorities say 934 people came in as families, 63 were unaccompanied children, and there were 39 single adults. Instances of large groups of migrants crossing into the United States have spiked since President Donald Trump took office. Since October, the Border Patrol has encountered groups of more than 100 people on 180 occasions. There were only 13 such encounters in the previous 12-month period and two the year before. I'm Mike Gracia.
Chinese scientists have discovered that carbon dioxide is more efficient to use in fracking than water. Fracking is the controversial process in which water or other fluids are injected into underground rocks at high pressure to release oil and natural gas deposits. U.S. environmentalists have denounced the process because of the huge amounts of water needed, the contamination of underground water supplies, and small earthquakes it triggers. This is VOA News. Attorney General William Barr says that Special Counsel Robert Mueller could have reached a decision on whether President Donald Trump obstructed justice. Barr says in an interview with CBS this morning that though Justice Department rules prevent the indictment of a sitting president, Mueller nonetheless could have decided whether Mr. Trump had committed a crime. As AP Sagar Magani reports, calls for Mr. Trump's impeachment continue to grow from some Democrats, and he's dismissing them.
The president says they could try.
They can because they're possibly allowed, although I can't imagine the court's allowing it.
Saying he did not commit a crime before giving reporters an impeachment tutorial on the White House driveway.
It's high crimes and misdemeanors. There was no high crime and there was no misdemeanor. So how do you impeach based on that?
As for what he in the past has called the I word,
it's a dirty, filthy, disgusting word.
Sagar Magani at the White House.
The United States is calling the Chinese government's violent suppression of peaceful demonstrations in and around Tiananmen Square on June 4, 1989, a full-on massacre. 30 years ago, student-led pro-democracy protests centered on Beijing's on the square with corruption among the elite, a key complaint among demonstrators. Protesters were also calling for political reforms in a fairer and more open society. Human rights groups believe several hundred to several thousand people were killed when tanks rolled through Tiananmen Square to squelch the demonstrations. According to Amnesty International, over recent weeks, police in China have detained, placed under house arrest, or threatened dozens of activists who are seeking to mark the June 4th anniversary, as well as relatives of those killed. Israel is in political turmoil after its parliament voted to dissolve itself a month after it was sworn in. Robert Berger reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
The Knesset, Israel's parliament, voted for new elections in September after Netanyahu failed to form a coalition government amid infighting and high demands from smaller parties. Netanyahu, a right-wing conservative who has been in power for a decade, is furious. He said he did everything in his power to avoid what he described as an unnecessary election, especially since the public gave him a strong vote of confidence in the April polls. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
And you can find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 31st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's opposition leader vows civil disobedience to effect political change.
Our message has been to tell people to engage in civic activities that gradually disempower the military junta until it is brought down.
Dr. Kizza Besigye is the former president of Uganda's main opposition, FDC. Cameroon's government says rights groups exaggerate separatist crisis. Amnesty International suspends its Zimbabwe branch for massive fraud, but a former director has a different view. And Nigerian President Buhari was inaugurated this week without a speech to the nation.
We wanted to find out what and what is he going to do in order to overcome those forces that led to the shortcomings in him not achieving his broad objective in those three pillars.
Chudi Chukwuani is an economist and political analyst. Today is World No Tobacco Day, and our series on indigenous African languages continues. This morning, we'll focus on the Bassa language in Liberia. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's polls are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A Ugandan opposition leader says an election organized by what he called a military junta headed by President Yoweri Museveni can never be free and fair. As such, Dr. Kizza Besigye, the former president of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, the FDC, says the focus of the opposition is to tell the Ugandan people to engage in civic activities that will gradually disempower what he calls the military junta until it is brought down, whether through or outside the electoral process. Dr. Besigye was reacting to a violent police breakup this week of an FDC rally through the use of tear gas and live bullets. The police said the assembly was illegal because the FDC members did not get clearance. But Dr. Besigye says the police action has nothing to do with the law.
Shortly after we arrived, the police in large numbers came and surrounded the area and told us to disperse. And we protested. We said we can't disperse this. And it was at our office, the district office of Forum for Democratic Change. So we said, this is our office. We pay rent for it. We are meeting our people here. We are entitled to meet them, and we shall not disperse. So they started tear gas, firing live bullets, throwing fragmentation grenades. And it is in that process that some of our people were indeed injured.
Dr. Besigye, the police say that the gathering was illegal and that if you wanted to have such a gathering, that you should have followed the proper procedures. A similar information was given to Bobby Wine as to why he could not hold his concert. What do you think the police mean when they say this?
This has absolutely nothing to do with the law, because the law allows, the Bill of Rights is very clear, the right to assemble and what one needs to do in order to assemble. And so they are just abusing the law. And as I have said, this is not about meetings. This is about stopping people who have different views from those of Mr. Museveni expressing their views to the people of Uganda. This has nothing to do with the law. It is all to do with the repression of political rights.
Has the opposition tested this particular law in court in terms of its legality?
As I have said, there is nothing within the law that allows the police to do what they are doing. So the law is very, very clear. It does not even need an interpretation. Nonetheless, we have filed a number of petitions regarding this violation. Unfortunately, it's been a number of years, and these petitions have not been heard by the courts.
So, Dr. Besigye, we haven't spoken with you recently in terms of political movement. What is happening now with your party?
Well, Bati, what is going on is not anything new. It is part of the mechanisms that Mr. Museveni has relied on to maintain power by force for the last 33 years. Our message has not been that an election organized by a military junta like we have, where all institutions are totally controlled, that election is going to change power from the junta to the citizens. Our message has been to tell people to engage in civic activities that gradually disempower the military junta until it is brought down, whether it's during an electoral process or outside the electoral process. The people of Sudan have just changed the government, again, from a regime that is in every sense similar to the regime that is down here.
Dr. Kizza Besigye is the former president of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. A cross-section of Nigerians is said to be displeased with President Muhammadu Buhari's decision not to address the nation during his second and final inauguration this week. As customary, critics say the president missed a big opportunity to assure Nigerians of his commitment to improve their living conditions, fight corruption, and address the security crisis, key promises he made before the election. Chudi Chukwuani is an economist and political analyst based in the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
The expectation was there that the president would have taken the opportunity of the inauguration to lay out a broad perspective on what we should expect in his second term. We don't want him to give full details, but at least he can give some bullet points and say, okay, this is in this second term, these are the things that I would like to focus on, and these are the ways and manners it might impact on the lives of the ordinary Nigerians. But at the same time, just prior to the election, we were getting all kinds of reports. Most people thought that the inauguration might not even take place at the Eco Square, that it might take place in the presidential villa, because the security agencies were saying that some people had planned to bomb the event. So maybe that must have been weighing on the mind of the president. He wanted the thing to be over with. He didn't want to give any opportunity for any mischief maker to take advantage.
Some are saying President Buhari is a man of action and he's always outlined his vision for the country in terms of the three pillars he campaigned on: improving security, jumpstarting the economy to create jobs for the youth, as well as fighting corruption, and that Nigerians are aware of these situations, so there's no need for him to make any speech, knowing very well what he stands for and what he has been doing for the people of Nigeria. How do you react to that?
Yeah, the way I react to that is that the president himself acknowledged to Nigerians that there have been some shortcomings in those three broad areas that you had outlined, which means he had identified the causes leading to those shortcomings. So we wanted to find out what and what is he going to do in order to overcome those causes that led to the shortcomings in him not achieving his broad objective in those three pillars. It means fighting corruption, revitalizing the economy, tackling insecurity. Because the insecurity level is at much worse state than it was prior to his coming on board. He himself acknowledged that on different occasions. And by that acknowledgement, it is right for people to know that, okay, he must have known the reasons why that led to those shortcomings. I mean, the start of kidnapping is ridiculous now, you know, in the northern side of Nigeria.
Chudi Chukwuani is an economist and a political analyst. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Cameroon is accusing the international community of exaggerating the crisis in the country's two English-speaking regions. Separatists there have been fighting the government of the mainly French-speaking country since 2017, alleging years of marginalization by the government. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
External Relations Minister Lejeune Belambela said Thursday his country has been the object of ceaseless attacks from international NGOs, rights groups and aid agencies over its handling of the separatist movement. This week, French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian told lawmakers in Paris that he is disturbed by the growing loss of human life in the region. On Wednesday, Refugees International said the Cameroonian government has refused to recognize the severity of the crisis and that international donors may be forced to reconsider their contribution. The United Nations estimates at least 1,800 people have been killed and more than 530,000 displaced since fighting broke out in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions in 2017. It says about 1.3 million people are in need. Belambela says the figures are exaggerated to give the impression Cameroon is not able to handle the situation.
In a platform He
says the government, with the assistance of its international partners, has distributed humanitarian assistance to 75,000 of the 150,000 internally displaced persons. Mbela Mbela did not give a number for those who have died, but said it was Cameroon's duty to lead peace efforts to ensure that stability and peace return to the region. He said the government is capable of doing that as a sovereign state without the intervention of other nations.
L'armée camerounaise n'est sur le terrain que pour protéger les populations et leurs biens.
He says, although it has been accused of committing atrocities, the Cameroon military has only been protecting its citizens from separatist fighters and defending the territorial integrity of the country. President Biya has said he is open to dialogue with the separatists, but will not discuss the division of Cameroon. Biya has branded the separatists as terrorists. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News. Yaoundé.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, May 31st, and Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Amnesty International has suspended its Zimbabwe branch for what it calls massive fraud. In a statement, Amnesty said its international board took the unprecedented step of suspending Amnesty International Zimbabwe from the global movement and placing it under administration following evidence of fraud and serious financial misconduct. Robert Chivambu, Amnesty International Media's manager for Southern Africa, declines to comment on the matter, saying it is under police investigation.
Unfortunately, we cannot comment further than the statement that was issued for legal reasons, because the issue that we're talking about is being investigated by Zimbabwean authorities. So we are not commenting further.
But we have talked to one of the former directors, Mr. Kausen Zilala, who is claiming actually that Amnesty International is actually lying here and they're always, brutalizing workers. So maybe you can react to that.
So I don't want to go into a debate with Mr. Kazim Zilala. It's precisely his decision if he's been talking to you, but we are not commenting further than that we have issued in the statement.
Yes, so now you stand by the decision that has been taken by Amnesty International. Is that what you are saying?
I'm sorry, James, I can't comment further on this issue.
Robert Chivambu is Amnesty International's media manager for Southern Africa. He was speaking with reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe service. But Kausen Zilala, a former director of Amnesty International in Zimbabwe, says he has filed a $3 million lawsuit against Amnesty.
One of the senior directors from the International Secretariat told me to resign from Amnesty because I have lived long and I have not been doing actually human rights impact. So due to that pressure, in fact, I actually responded to him, I can't resign because I found you there. Then he said, if what you are saying, if you insist that you will stay, you will face the misery and I will force you to leave. Actually, they then instructed the local Zimbabwean board to create that unconducive and intolerable environment that would force me to leave from Amnesty International. And I succumbed to that pressure. I resigned on the 21st of March, 2018. When I left, they then decided to carry out what they called a forensic audit after my notice period had also actually expired. So I was not part of that audit. I could not even respond to the auditor's question because I was no longer with Amnesty after having spent over 3 months without them.
What happened then when this matter was referred to the police?
The police investigated the matter. So the police then came up with a report that there was no fraud at all, and the Amnesty actually made a false report. So after they received the report that their report was false, we went then had no choice but to sue Amnesty, and we sued Amnesty, the three of us, for defamation of character and malicious arrest. We are having 3 cases against Amnesty at the High Court.
Kausen Zilala is a former director of Amnesty International in Zimbabwe. He was speaking with Harare, with Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe service. Today, May 31st, is World No Tobacco Day, a day set aside by the World Health Organization and global partners to raise awareness on the harmful and deadly effects of tobacco use, as well as exposure to secondhand smoke. According to the World Health Organization, tobacco kills more than 8 million people a year, with more than 7 million of those deaths resulting from direct tobacco use. Maureen Ojiambo has more from Nairobi.
This year, the theme of the day is tobacco and lung health, a critical concern in the globe and in Kenya because of the negative impact that tobacco has on people's lung health. In the streets of Nairobi, I meet Michael Otieno at the smoking zone, quenching the thirst, as he puts it. Otieno says he started smoking because of the environment he was exposed to, whereby most of his friends smoke. His attempts to quit the habit for the last 8 years he has been smoking has hit the rocks, and he hopes that one day he shall quit since he understands the repercussions that come by tobacco.
I started smoking many years ago. First of all, it starts as a hobby and it starts like something fun, and then you feel like, yeah, you're part of the group. I've tried. Sometimes you go out, you have a packet of cigarettes, you throw it in water when you're high, but in the morning you're going there to buy two pieces. A lot of time we smoke more when you're free because you have a lot of time in your hand.
Tobacco affects people's lung health across the life course through lung cancer, chronic respiratory disease, asthma, air pollution, tuberculosis, among others. Martin Mukango, who has been smoking since 1994, had to quit smoking after he suffered from a coronary artery disease that was caused by smoking. Mukango, however, admits that quitting smoking was not easy for him.
I started smoking since I was 20 years. I used to take about not less than 10 cigarettes a day. And each time I've been thinking of quitting, it has been very, very tough. Until early last year, I was admitted to hospital with a heart problem. What the doctor told me about one of the causes that usually causes such diseases is smoke. Quitting smoking is not easy. Unfortunately, I had to quit out of having been admitted to the hospital.
Commemorating of this day is a call for effective policies to reduce tobacco consumption and engage stakeholders across multiple sectors in the fight against tobacco. Kenya's efforts to control tobacco has been progressive, as it has also signed the protocol to eliminate illicit trade in tobacco products in 2013. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
This year is the year of indigenous languages, and language activists in Africa are working to put the spotlight on the threats that local languages face and the impact on those who speak these languages. Ricky Stryer continues her five-part series that explores five different West African languages. This morning, she spoke to Siruwa Soma, an advocate for the Bassa language of Liberia.
Well, the Bassa is, according to census here in Liberia, is the second largest ethnic group in the Republic of Liberia. So you have more than 300 to 350,000 speakers of the Bassa language in Liberia. However, if it comes to the reading of the language, the percentage is very, very low. And that is the official language alphabet called the VA, the Bassa VA.
Why do so few people speak it, and are you concerned that that number will continue to decrease?
We are concerned, but I am still hopeful to demystify our mother tongue, for it to shine, because there are a lot of misconceptions when it comes to languages in Liberia. People consider a language to be unofficial, a language to be quote-unquote primitive language. And as you may know, there is no such thing as, quote-unquote, a primitive language or an official language. Most of the official languages that we are speaking today in Liberia or around the world is because of military power, because of economic power. The main threat here is selecting, quote-unquote, English as the official language of Liberia and considering all the other languages as a primitive language, that people are discouraged, they are ashamed to speak their mother tongue.
Are there ideas or philosophies that can really only be transmitted through Bassa?
Oh, absolutely. We have, for example, we have our legend. The Duangayu is the migrations of the Bassa, the creations of the universe. And the Bassa language is very, very rich in terms of their vocabularies and philosophy. And if it is not spoken or eliminated, we will lose our culture, our values, our institutions. We have two institutions, one of which is the Poro College. I call it Poro College. Other people call it Poro Bridge or Sandy Bridge. They give it all the kinds of derogatory names to make it to look like it's a cannibalistic or some kind of primitive institution.
And do local governments and schools use the language? And if not, you know, what efforts are being made to expand local language use?
The government is not giving up money directly to teach the languages in Liberia or to teach, to say, here is the money here for Bassa. But what we did was that when I got on board, they would have French. That's one of the languages, a foreign language and so forth.
That was Cyril Wasoma, an advocate for the Bassa language of Liberia. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Monrovia. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports from the under-20 FIFA World Cup currently on the way in Poland, where the Nigerian under-20 team, the Flying Eagles, on Thursday night battled to a 1-1 draw against Ukraine in their final group game to qualify for the next round. The Flying Eagles required a victory to be double sure of their place in the round of 16, but they were still able to pull through as one of the best losers, having recorded a big win against Qatar. And now to the elite African club competition, the CAF Champions League, where Esperance du Tunis will take on Wydad Casablanca in the 2018-2019 CAF Champions League final second leg clash later tonight. The encounter is scheduled to be played at the Stade Olympique de Reims in the Tunisian city of Reims. The two teams played a 1-1 stalemate in the first leg match, which was played in the Moroccan city of Rabat last weekend. On ahead of the 2019 African Cup of Nations in Egypt, the Confederation of African Football President Ahmed Ahmed said a special committee has been set up to deal with security concerns as the African Cup of Nations in Egypt begins next month. At least 12 people were injured when an explosion hit a bus carrying mostly South African tourists in Cairo 10 days ago. Egyptian Interior Ministry said recently that militant group Hassam were planning a series of attacks in the country to create an atmosphere of chaos. The Nations Cup will feature 24 teams from around the continent to play at venues in Cairo, Alexandria, Ismailia, and Suez from June the 21st to July the 19th. In cricket news, South African national cricket captain Faf du Plessis admitted his team were comprehensively outplayed by England in their Cricket World Cup opener on Thursday in London. Host England made 311 for 8 after being sent into a bat by du Plessis before bowling out the South Africans for 207 to start their campaign with an emphatic 104-run victory at the Oval. Captain Faf du Plessis told reporters that England were better in all three facets of the game.
As disappointed as we are with our performances today, you have to make sure you learn from it quickly and put every single doubt to bed, because there is a next game that you've got to make sure you play good cricket again.
And finally, South Africa's Olympic 800 meters champion Caster Semenya has filed an appeal to Switzerland's Federal Supreme Court in response to losing her case against restricting testosterone levels in female runners. The 28-year-old Caster Semenya, in a statement on Wednesday after lodging the appeal, was quoted as saying, "I am a woman and I'm a world-class athlete. The IWAF will not drug me or stop me from being who I am," end of quote. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, May 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.